God really preserved my grandparents. One of his friends, he said, you know, why don't you go to the mainland? You know, I know there's a secret boat that's leaving tonight. Go there, spend a couple weeks, and we'll look after your store. That night, the Allies started their bombing campaign and completely leveled the city.
Welcome, everyone, to the season finale of the Hive Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Bujor, and my guest today is Tim Aka, Director of Investments for the General Conference in Maryland. His entrepreneurial story starts with his grandparents, who were merchants. It continues with his father, who became an Adventist pioneer in Japan, and ends with Tim himself using the power of business and investment for God's remnant church.
My father was the first Adventist pastor on my home island, which is the island of Okinawa. Some of you may be familiar with Okinawa. It is the southernmost island of the country of Japan. It was very famous for the Battle of Okinawa, and some of you might have seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge that took place on the island of Okinawa. And so it was in the very middle of the Second World War, and certainly was a devastating time for people of Okinawa. But I'm always grateful that sort of God had looked after our family, and really feel like he had a purpose for our family. And he looked after both my parents and my grandparents throughout that time. So I'm always humbled to think about how God has preserved our families and taken care of them. But yeah, my father was the first Adventist pastor. The way that happened was the missionary Elder Jensen had come to the island of Okinawa, and he had actually been directed there by the General Conference. And interesting story there is that shortly after the Second World War, a Japanese pastor in the island of Hawaii, he knew about what had happened in Okinawa and some of the devastation that had happened. So four people got together, and they wrote a letter to the General Conference requesting that the General Conference send a missionary to the island of Okinawa to help the people there and to tell them about the gospel message. There had been no Seventh-day Adventists in the island of Okinawa as of yet. So they sent this letter, and the General Conference received this letter and approved it, I guess, and sent Elder Jensen to be the first missionary for the island of Okinawa. When he got there, he didn't really speak any Japanese. So he went to the university, Ryukyu University, and he went to the administration and asked for someone who can help him translate. And so they introduced him to this class. My father's class was the first class for the university since the end of the war. So after the war, again, everything was devastated, so they had to rebuild from scratch. And so my father's class was the very first class of that university, of this brand new university. Anyways, so Elder Jensen came and asked if somebody would be willing to be an interpreter. And a lot of the students were really intent on learning English, because that was very key, they felt, for the future, being now occupied by the United States. They asked for somebody to translate for this Christian minister. And of course, everybody's kind of like looking down. Nobody really wanted to volunteer. And my dad felt really sorry for him. So, you know, he volunteered to be an interpreter for him, for Elder Jensen. So he started working with him. And of course, the first few times he translated, it was a complete disaster because he had no idea about, you know, what any of the words meant, or the books of the Bible, or, you know, turn to this book. And like, well, he had no idea. But he studied with Elder Jensen, and you know, after a year, he was baptized and started working and became a Seventh-day Adventist. And he continued to work with Elder Jensen and started working in the ministry. But also, you know, he was a university student and did quite well in university. And so he was given a scholarship to come to the United States to study for a few years at one of our, you know, one of the universities in the United States. And it was quite an honor to receive that. It was given to the top students. And so he was very excited about going to the United States. It, you know, for people of Okinawa, this was like, you know, you hit the jackpot, right? You were going to be able to go to the United States and live in this amazing country. You know, so he was very excited about that. But Elder Jensen had other plans for him. And he said, you know, no, you should really go to Japan Missionary College. We had a small college there in just outside of Tokyo, where, you know, we had pastoral training and training for teachers and so on. So this was just around March. So, you know, in Japan, the school year goes from you know, March to March, right? Not from June, or I guess March to February anyways. So you know, my dad was like, you know, thank you for the offer, but you know, I'm really excited to go to the United States and have this opportunity. But then you know, Elder Jensen persisted, you know, and thank God that he did. And he said, well, you know, your school doesn't start for you until September in the United States. So why don't you just go from March till June and see what it's like? And, you know, you can go to school, and if you like it, you know, and you can stay. But if you don't like it, you can still go to the United States. And so my dad said, okay, fine. So he said he would go, and he went to Japan Missionary College in April and started classes there. And really was, you know, was inspired by the Lord, and he felt that that's where he needed to be, and so he continued and stayed there for the, you know, for the rest of the time, you know, he didn't go for his scholarship to the United States. And, you know, a number of his classmates who did go to the United States on that scholarship, you know, a lot of them were, you know, became very, very, very successful. Many were either like politicians and lawyers and so on, as, you know, they had gotten this extra training by going to the United States. But still, my dad always felt that he was far more blessed by going to Japan Missionary College and living, becoming a pastor, than if he had gone to, you know, than he had gone to the United States. And certainly, you know, I mean, just jumping ahead a little bit, you know, for his family, for myself, my brother, my sister, and our extended family, you know, my dad's work for the church, certainly was a huge blessing for us. And we would have never had the opportunities that we have had, had it not been for the fact that he did say yes and went to Japan Missionary College, and it changed the path of his life completely. And so, you know, again, we're always thinking of how God had really inspired Elder Jensen to look after my dad and set him on a course that would be, you know, a completely different course than many of his classmates. And we feel so grateful and blessed.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I love the theme that runs through the story of sacrifice and how it was really worth it at the end, you know. And I think that you're going to share some more details later on about this topic as well. But I want to just know how the story continues. Now, you are in the U.S. your father didn't go at the time he wanted to go, but, you know, now your family is here. And tell us a little more what happened afterwards. What happened when your father graduated from the mission college there? And how did you come here?
So, you know, my dad finished his studies at Japan Missionary College. He went back to Okinawa, worked for, you know, a dozen years there. You know, he did a lot of great work in the island of Okinawa. And then he got an opportunity to go to, well, or not opportunity, but he felt like he really needed to get more education. And wanted to go to Andrews University to study there, and to do his, because he only had a 2-year degree from Japan Missionary College, and he really wanted to get his bachelor's degree and his master's degree. And so, you know, again, it was, it was a lot of money to go all the way to the United States study and so on. But a bunch of interesting things happened. But really, it was my grandparents that helped fund a lot of that. You know, and they were, my grandmother was such an entrepreneur. And, you know, I'd love to tell a little bit about her story. But she helped us tremendously. For my parents and our families as well. And it was really through her entrepreneurial activities, her business, that we were able to do, you know, do the things that we did. And we're certainly grateful for that. And, you know, and God really preserved them, my grandparents, during the war. And they were not even Adventists. They weren't Christians or anything at the time. So during the war, they had evacuated most of the women and children from the island to the mainland. And so my mother and her sisters and my grandma, they had been evacuated and they were living in the mainland. And then, you know, this was about 3 or 4 months before the Battle of Okinawa. And so my grandfather, he had started to become worried because he had not heard from them. He hadn't received any letters or anything like that. So he was very worried. Now, my grandparents were merchants and, you know, they were one of the families, merchants who in the island, in that city of Naha, who had a liquor license. And so they were able to sell liquor. But they were very generous. And so, you know, they quite often had people over in the evenings to have a drink. And, you know, and the people of the community loved them because they were very generous and giving. And so they had a lot of friends. Of course, you know, I'm not recommending that we, you know, drink with friends and this stuff, so on. But they were Adventists, right? That's who they were. Anyway, so during this war, one of his friends was the chief of police for the city. And he said, you know, Mr. Yoshiyama, why don't you go to the mainland? You know, I know there's a secret boat that's leaving tonight to go to the mainland. Go there, spend a couple of weeks, and we'll look after your store. And come back and, you know, it'll be fine, right? And so, you know, he trusted him and his, you know, they were good friends and said, okay. So he got on the boat and went to the mainland. That night, the Allies started their bombing campaign. And they from the ships, from the battleships and from the air, they bombed Okinawa, the mainland, the main cities there. And completely leveled the city. If my grandfather was there, he would have been dead. But for whatever miracle, that night, the night before the bombing started, he had left to go to the mainland to go see his family. And there's so many stories, you know, because he went off. He had no idea where they were. And so he's off to go find his family. And through more miracles, he was able to find his family and so on. But, you know, when my parents tell me these stories, it just astounds me that God was looking after them, you know, even before they were Adventists, right? And I think about the Bible text that tells us, you know, before you were born, right, I knew you. And so God invested a lot into my grandparents who weren't even Adventists, because I think he knew the character of the people he was working with. And I told you, you know, earlier, my grandmother, when she got started in the business, when she was a young teenager, she started helping with selling rice at the market. She was working with a merchant and selling rice. And, you know, the rice vendors were notorious for being very cheap. And they would always, you know, give you less rice than you were supposed to get, right? So they'd always skimp on the portions. And so, you know, everybody was always looking out for that. But when my grandmother started, she not only gave them their fair portion, she'd always give a little extra. And even, especially with people, families who knew she was, who were struggling, she'd always give a little bit of extra, you know. And of course, word got out that, you know, if you go to Tsuru, that was her name, you know, you'll get, not only will you get your fair amount, you'll get a little bit more. And so now everybody was going to her to buy the rice, right? And so she was extremely successful in her little rice vending business. But, you know, that was sort of the character, that was the character of her. And even her grandmother, you know, pardon me if I could tell another story. You know, my grandmother's mother was also a very generous and kind person. It was a horrible tradition, but you know, if you had a mishap, say, and you know you were in debt, or someone got sick, or something, often they would sell their children to get money to get out of debt, or so on. And so this family, the husband, I think, got sick. And so they were going to sell her, this one young daughter, their daughter, to a brothel. And that's how they would, you know, that's how they would receive money for that. And she could also, you know, give some money from that activity. But when my great grandmother heard about this, she said, you know, well, how much are you going to receive for that? And they told her how much it was. And so my grandmother paid that amount and took her, this young woman, as her own daughter and looked after her. And so it wasn't her real daughter, but so my mom said she always had an extra aunt because her grandmother redeemed this young lady from living in a brothel and took her in as her own family. And so this kind of generosity sort of ran in this family. You know, I just think that God had blessed them. And even before they were Christians, you know, they blessed them with this very kind, gentle, and generous spirit. And certainly we're the beneficiaries of all of that. So that's a bit of the background of my parents, and I know I sort of meandered a little bit here, but I guess you were asking about my dad. So my dad was able to go to Andrews and did his bachelor's and his master's in 3 years. So what should have taken 4 years, he did it in 3 years, because he knew he only had about 3 years to do it. And so he worked really hard to finish that. And then after that, he went back to Japan, worked in Japan for a while, and then was called to come to Canada and be a pastor in Canada. And that's where he stayed for 20 years, and pastored a small Japanese congregation in Canada. But that really gave, you know, myself and my brother and sister an opportunity to you know, live in Canada, to study and work, and you know, we're very blessed by that. My brother is he went to Loma Linda. He's a surgeon. My sister is a very successful artist, and I have the privilege of working for the General Conference. So, you know, great blessings. My brother, I just want to tell a little bit about my brother. He married a Filipino lady, and you know, actually a lot of medical people in there. And every 2 or 3 years, he goes to the Philippines, and does a mission trip, and does a medical mission trip, and does surgeries. He goes to some of the remote islands and does a lot of surgery. He's a vascular surgeon, so he does all these surgeries for free. For people who can't afford, you know, surgeries. I think the last time he went, he talked about this guy. He had this, I think it was about a 40-pound growth on his neck. And of course, you know, they didn't have the ability to remove it, because it's a very, very skilled work, because all the blood vessels and everything that goes through it. And so my brother was able to successfully remove that. And I mean, it's life-changing. You know, you have a 40-pound growth on your neck. When you have that removed, it was quite life-changing. But, you know, he's had that opportunity to do things like that. So, again, we're always thinking about, you know, what a privilege it is for us to serve the Lord and to have the opportunity to do the things that we do. And it goes back. You know, it goes well back beyond just my parents, but certainly to my grandparents and even my great-grandparents, and the kind of people that they were.
Yeah. Wow. Praise the Lord. This is an amazing, multiple amazing stories that you just shared. And I just love how that kind of the loop closes. And you know, from that first letter and the first missionary that you know, the General Conference sent, you know, all the way back then to you being back at the General Conference now working, and you know, fulfilling God's purpose for your life. I mean, this is just stories like that you can't script. I mean, this is God is just working in miraculous ways. I appreciate you sharing that.
No, it's true. I, again, it's very humbling to know that. And for me, you know, it's not a question of, you know, am I in the right place and doing the right thing? I'm very confident in the fact that I'm where I'm supposed to be and doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Amen. Now we're going to take a short break, everyone, and be right back and listen to more powerful stories and just what lessons Tim has learned over the years, you know, and basically how he has ended up at the GC. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for other Adventists to collaborate with you for an exciting new project? Do you want to get more exposure with your missional business? Become a sponsor for this podcast. Get featured on our website and have thousands of Adventists listen to your ad. Just email us at hello@hiveinternational.org.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Hive Podcast. I'm here with Tim Aka, and we're talking about his story, his family story, and how God has just miraculously led him and his family all throughout the years. And now we've listened to what happened to your father, Tim. We've listened to what happened to your grandmother as well. How was it like to grow up in that family for you and your siblings? You lived in Canada for a while, then you came to the U.S. How was it like to be in that family?
I mean, it was wonderful, you know. I have nothing bad to say about my parents. I know sometimes people can complain about their parents, but my parents were so wonderful. And I had it was a dream growing up in Canada and being able to live in a place like Toronto, where it's very diverse and open, it was a wonderful place to live. These stories I'm just telling you there, my parents really never told us these stories until I was much older. And they never sort of laid any kind of a guilt trip on us, right? And said, oh, you know, these are all the horrible calamities that we went through, so, you know, you got to work harder or something like that, right? I had no idea about most of these things until much later in life. But I'm really grateful that my mom is continuing to tell me these stories. And I hear, often as you get older, you forget what stories you told. So I often hear my same stories that my mom tells. But I'm happy to hear them again for the multiple times. But as often she tells me a new twist to the stories and so on. So always grateful for stories, about your own history and so on. So, but it was a wonderful, wonderful way to grow up. Our small Japanese congregation was a terrific congregation. I tell people, I said, we talk about our young people leaving our churches and so on, right? But again, it was a small congregation, but I can think about, there was maybe 15 of us or so around my age when I was going to church there. And I think, as far as I know, all but maybe one or two are still in the church and very active and strong in their faith within my peers that we were growing up together. And again, I think that that's a testament to my parents and also to the Japanese community. And as I mentioned, I often hear about people sort of being very legalistic and that type of thing in different churches. And we never felt that in our own church, right? We were all accepted, and I was quite a rascal. So when I was growing up, and I'm sure it caused lots of trouble. But nobody, we're not scolded or not put a guilt trip on us or anything like that, right? And really, we all felt very, very much that we belonged in that church. We were a small community, we're a strong community. And again, for me, that was such a blessing. And when I hear about some of the challenges that other churches are having with their young people and so on, or even some of my peers from like high school and so on, who so many of my classmates from high school are no longer in the church. Again, I think, how blessed was I to be able to be in a congregation where so many of my peers are still members and strong in their faith. Another great blessing, for me.
Yeah, that is very true. Thank you for sharing. Now you are working as the associate treasurer for the GC, and you are directing the investment office. How did you get interested in that topic of investment and finance and all of that? What excites you about it?
It's actually this. I was doing that similar job. I work for the TD Bank in Canada, which is a big financial institution, working on the investment side of their business for quite some time. I worked for TD and Royal Bank in Canada for over 20 years. And so, coming to the General Conference, it was pretty easy. The work was very similar to what I was doing back in Canada. So the work itself was something I'm very interested in. I guess I sort of get my business genes from from my grandmother, maybe. I like the idea of working in a small business and so on. Actually, after university, one of my first jobs was working in a small business in a food company, making sort of vegetarian products. And I really enjoyed that experience, learned a tremendous amount about business there. From there I did my MBA and went on to banking and investments. But I love the idea of investments, of putting some, taking an idea, and trying to develop those ideas, working with clients and investing. And then, I think as I got older, I really got into more of the markets, and I found that very fascinating. It's very complex, very interconnected, and changing all the time. And I really enjoyed that, you're constantly having to learn and adapt and trying to improve your processes, because, the investment world constantly changes. And the other part was, I think, I started to really think about how does economics and finance, how does that intersect with our faith and our prophecies? And I've written a little bit about that, and that's really has been an interesting journey for me as well, to kind of think about our intersection between economics and history and prophecy. Obviously, if you think about prophecy, you think about political processes and so on, whether it be the French Revolution or things like that. But of course, economics often drives politics and history and wars and so on. And so trying to put those things together and understand that better, it sort of wasn't, I think as I look back on it, I think, okay, well, that obviously makes sense because, yeah, money drives so many things. But I don't see a lot of work that had been done on that type of thing. So, it was very eye-opening for me to sort of put those things together. So, from just a pure investment perspective, and also looking at it from my faith and from understanding the world a little bit better, it's been a very interesting challenge, and kind of learning a little bit every day. And, of course, right now, so many things are happening. Again, trying to better understand all of these things and the implications of the events that are happening now.
Yes. Now, what kind of work are you doing for GC? I mean, for someone who's listening to this and who, maybe is not familiar with what the General Conference is investing in, can you share that a little bit about that? And also, what kind of business practices do you use, and what principles do you implement as a world church that help spread the gospel and make the work that we do for the Lord more efficient?
Sure. So, the General Conference Investment Office, we provide investment services for our entire world church. We have investors from every part of the globe. And generally speaking, we are managing money for them. And, about two-thirds of what we do is related to pension plans or some kind of retirement funds for our different divisions and so on. And the other third is about what we call operating funds, it's just surplus, like excess reserves that a church or division or conference would have. And so we help them manage that. The fun part about it is being able to talk to people from different parts of the world. Before the pandemic, we would get on a plane and visit them every now and, every year or two. And that was always great. Since the pandemic, we haven't traveled nearly as much, but looking forward to hopefully getting back to a little bit more normal situation. Although, every time we think things are normal, things get a little worse, I'm supposed to go to Europe in the fall for division meetings. But of course, we're seeing what's happening there with the energy crisis and so on. And I hope I'll still get to go, but I know that there's a lot of suffering, a lot of pain that's going to be, coming. So we're always conscious of that type of thing. But part of what we're doing is obviously managing the funds, but also trying to help our churches understand sort of what's going on in the economy, help understand, economics is a sort of world unto itself, but And sometimes it seems very, I don't know what's the word, right? It seems unpredictable, although there are a lot of things that, you know, are interconnected. And if you put the dots to, if you connect the dots together properly, you sort of get a better picture of what's going on, right? And so, you know, even a couple of years ago, we started talking about inflation, how that's going to come, you know, that's probably post-pandemic, it's going to start to get really bad. And so we've been talking about those types of things, currency problems and so on. We've been hedging currencies, things like that. So we're, you know, we're trying to put these things together and prepare our church, prepare the, you know, general conference finances to make sure that we can continue to operate as long as we can. We know the world is going down a road that is irreversible, but you know, we want to be able to continue to operate as long as we can. So we're investing in the, you know, various markets, fixed income markets, the equity markets, and so on. And you know, we're trying to run a program. I think that, you know, we think it's a world-class program. We're partnering with some of the big firms like a Franklin Templeton, you know, PIMCO, Western Asset Management, and so on. They sub-advise for us, and they manage a lot of our money. And so we're trying to put together a really great program where people can have our church organizations can have very professional asset management services, but at a very reasonable price. Because, you know, as a general conference, we don't charge an advisory fee. You know, we just cover our costs. And of course, you know, these big firms do charge some fees. But overall, you know, our overall cost is probably less than half of what you might get. You might have to pay if you, you know, went to these companies yourself. So we hope that, you know, that the cost savings is one factor, but, you know, we're hoping that we provide good performance in our investments, and, you know, trying to evolve all the time. And, you know, the investment world has changed, right? You know, I've been at it for 20 years and, or I guess more than 20 years now. And it's changed considerably, you know, from, you know, I've seen enough market crashes. I was around in 2000 when the tech bubble burst. I was around in 2008 when we had the, you know, the real estate crisis and the global financial crisis, you know, during COVID. So I've had the privilege of, well, I don't know if it's a privilege, but I've seen quite a few market dislocations and how the markets evolve and change after that, after these episodes, right? And how, as an investor, as an investment firm, we need to continue to adapt and change our approach as we go forward. So that's always a challenge, and I enjoy that challenge. I've got a great team that I work with, and you know, we're always looking to try and improve all of our processes. So that's a fun challenge.
Awesome! That's really great. Now, wrapping this up here, and I wish we could talk for a couple more hours hearing more of your stories that you've been sharing, but wrapping up here, I wanted to ask you if you could give one investment advice or just a general advice to a missional business owner. We have a lot of missional business owners here listening. What advice would you share or give?
So let me tell another story. My grandmother, who this business lady, her family was, you know, fairly successful business people. They had some properties and they had a small house that they were renting out. And this young man and his mother were renting this house. And she was not well. She had some, you know, medical issues and so on. And this young man was looking after her, very kind. He'd go out, work hard, and come home and look after his mother. This young 20-something year old guy. And so, you know, my great grandparents were looking around and going, yeah, you know, our youngest daughter, we you know, she needs to get married, right? And so they were looking around. And they saw it. You know, there was all these other, you know, well-to-do families and so on, right? But, you know, their parents, my great-grandparents saw this young man and how he treated his mother. And she said, you know, that's a person of character, right? And so they actually had, you know, in those days, they always had a go-between. You never went and talked to that person. So they asked a go-between, and he went and talked to this young man and he said, you know, would you be interested in courting this young lady from this family? And he's like, well, no, I'm just a poor, you know, I'm a nobody, right? And they're a, you know, well-to-do, well-heeled family with, you know, with wealth. And, but they said, you know, there's lots of wealthy people, but we see how you treat your mother. And, you know, we see your character, and that's more important to us than wealth, right? We have wealth, but we want someone with character. And so after these conversations, he agreed to court her and they got married. And they became my grandparents. But I think, you know, in business today, character is so important. You know, honesty, integrity, character, it means so much, right? And people are watching, you know, and if you have a missional business that you're going out and you're doing things, people are watching, and they may not be saying anything, but they're watching. And somewhere along the way, someone is going to go, I see that person, that young man, that young woman has tremendous character. And I want to do business with them, or I want to get involved with that person because I see that character. And, you know, I think that's a lesson for me that, you know, even when you think nobody's watching, people are watching. And, if your character shines with the character of Jesus, people will notice, and that's the most powerful thing you can do in your business, is to reflect the character of Christ.
New season, new business. We are diving into a powerful series of life-changing stories and testimonies. The world's largest raisin company, another Adventist billionaire and his top mistakes, practical business advice, marketing, finances, and sales. You'll hear it here on the Hive Podcast. We are starting season 3 on October 24 at 6 a.m. And you can listen on your favorite podcast platform or, of course, on HiveInternational.org. My name is Vincent Bujor. I can't wait to see you again in a couple weeks. And until then, God bless you and see you soon.